This week's episode of Fair Shake. I'm your host Laura, and today we will be exploring the secretive world of body dissatisfaction and body image issues in men. Before we get started, the following program will be discussing body dysmorphia, muscle dysmorphia, and mentions of suicide. If this is something you cannot listen to right now, we completely understand. We will see you later for next week's episode. In the last few years, body dissatisfaction in both men and women has been on the rise, with more and more people engaging with social media, which can lead to dangerous comparisons. Stereotypically, body dissatisfaction and body image issues are associated with women, with many saying it's a women's issue of vanity. However, the National Eating Disorder Collaboration found that almost 40% of people suffering with eating disorders are men. With that being said, men are also less likely to report mental and physical health issues, suggesting the numbers may be even higher. But it doesn't stop there. Whilst it's completely normal to experience some body dissatisfaction, this can develop into body dysmorphic disorder, also known as BDD. Psychologist and body image expert Dr. Veya Sikas explains the difference between the two.
Because there is a difference between, let's say, dysmorphic concerns, which are more symptomatic of body dysmorphic disorder, or body dysmorphic disorder. So the disorder itself is a psychopathology, and it's part of the obsessive compulsive disorders. And the reason that it's there and not in, say, eating disorders is because it is this constant worry about perceived, often perceived, defects in one's appearance. And often it's more to do with the face or the head area rather than the body. So it does kind of differentiate itself that way, is that one's not necessarily concerned about losing weight. It's more about, oh, this part of me is not like I would like it to be, or it doesn't conform to the ideal beauty standard. And so they either try to camouflage it, or they will go to lengths, like really extreme lengths, such as cosmetic surgery. So that's the real difference between the two, is that one's a psychopathology, is more of an obsessive compulsive thing, and the other one is really just an evaluative thing, which most of us have. So it can come and go, and many of us will experience on a continuum various levels of satisfaction or dissatisfaction with how we look, yeah.
Dr. Veya Sikas has focused her research primarily on the effects of social media on body satisfaction and explains how social media is influencing the perception of our bodies. Her research has found a negative correlation between social media and body satisfaction, meaning the more you're scrolling, the less happy with yourself you're likely to be, regardless of gender or age. Apps such as TikTok are key players in this effect, as you have very little control over what graces your For You page, with very few warnings to protect users from seeing content they may find triggering.
I do think the pressures have got higher, and I think social media has a lot to do with that. We're constantly comparing ourselves to, you know, the showreels of everyone's life. And I think we're getting better at acknowledging that they are showreels and that we shouldn't be comparing ourselves, but we can't help it. And, you know, even in social comparison theory, we understand that comparisons are almost innate. We can't, it's just something we automatically do without even thinking that we've done it. And in terms of the young people, I don't know whether it's just become normative discontent. I don't know whether, oh, well, I'm body dissatisfied, but that's normal, everyone is. That's not healthy, but I guess I'm just trying to say that when we talk about body dissatisfaction, certainly today, it isn't something people kind of are shocked by. We sort of know that it is normative, whether we have it intensely, whether it's mild, but sometimes it comes and goes, so it's not always with us. But I do think that unfortunately we are constantly consuming media that is tapping into our own insecurities and our vulnerabilities. And it's doing that far quicker than traditional media ever did. I think the difference, we've always found this very similar correlation with traditional media. But I think the difference with social media is that people have access to it 24/7. So they're spending far more time on it. They're scrolling through it at a pace they would not normally scroll through in a magazine or even on television. So it's really just the amount of access and the amount of consumption is very different compared to traditional media.
The normalization of this deep-seated body dissatisfaction can often go undiagnosed. Dr. Seekers commented that a lot of people with body dysmorphic disorder or BDD do not get help. Often clients will come in and maybe discuss the depression and anxiety they are feeling, but rarely get to the root of the cause. If gone untreated, it can become chronic and increasingly difficult to treat. Body dysmorphia is often perceived very differently in men rather than women. Women typically strive for slim, toned bodies, whereas men can fall into one of two main camps. Some men also strive for leanness, but more often will strive to look larger and more muscular. Whilst it is healthy to take an interest in your physical wellness, those with obsessive worry may find this to be a slippery slope.
A lot of the time, I think people lose insight because they start off fairly healthy and they start off doing things in a healthy way. It's just that the anxiety of maintaining something moves from kind of a normal maintenance into more delusional. And so they start to think or perceive that something is becoming something it actually isn't. But unfortunately, they do lose insight. And so if they don't have the insight, then they don't really know that what they're doing might be damaging. And that's half the battle, is having that insight. The other thing is, some do have insight and don't care, because it could be a work thing. This could be something that they do for their work, and so they're prepared to take the consequences. So it really depends on the individual, and particularly with men, where they compete. They'll go into bodybuilding competitions, etc. Or they might have their own websites, social media platforms, and so they feel they just need to keep this up. Even though they might be struggling, they just think, well, that's all part of the job. So again, it's difficult to say to them, well, you maybe need to seek some help.
You're listening to Fair Shake on The Source. Conversations on the Australian Bodybuilding Forum regarding men's body image concerns highlight the drastically different perspectives. While some use this space to find others who are suffering and build community, there are a slew of individuals that use their anonymity to criticize others' bodies, creating a breeding ground for mental health and body image concerns. These comments include men asking for validation on their pre-existing weight, and in return receiving an onslaught of people who compare their bodies to slender celebrity women or prepubescent girls. In response to some of this online harassment, user George OZ posted the following warning.
Both young men and young women are bombarded with near-fake images of ideal physiques, and there is quite a lot of body dysmorphia going on. The pressures on the kids are enormous, and it's small wonder that some fall into a melancholia when they find out their genes will just not send the messages to the beautiful people appear to have received. Young men, often still in the midst of puberty, eagerly seek transformation, and this site is guilty of egregious promotion. Nothing wrong with fitness and nothing wrong with a sexy, attractive body, but those who resort to illegal drugs will find there may be all sorts of issues later in life.
You're listening to Fair Shake on The Source. Anthropologist and University of Queensland lecturer Dr. Mare Underwood has been investigating the relatively new phenomenon called muscle dysmorphia, a preoccupation with one's muscularity and leanness.
It's a preoccupation that leads to, the medical definition is that leads to some significant impairment in social functioning and that sort of thing. It involves a certain distortion of body image. Initially, it was termed reverse anorexia or bigorexia because it is sort of the opposite of what an anorexic has in terms of body image distortion. So rather, an anorexic sees themselves as fatter than they actually are. Someone with muscle dysmorphia sees themselves as smaller than they actually are in terms of their muscularity. So it's interesting parallels with anorexia.
Dr. Underwood's research has investigated this phenomenon through the lens of bodybuilding. Her research supports that bodybuilding is a bit of a mental health risk environment, and we are currently unsure how this can be done in a mentally healthy way.
From a medical perspective, the research on causes has sort of focused on things that have been important to understanding other body image pathologies like anorexia, so trauma, family relations. There's been efforts to look for genes and things that are linked to muscle dysmorphia. What I found and what my sort of contribution to understanding is that from the bodybuilder perspective, it was actually the practice of bodybuilding that made them develop muscle dysmorphia. So if that's the case, you know, anyone who starts playing in this space of building muscle and trying to be lean could develop muscle dysmorphia. So I would talk to bodybuilders and they would say things, the day you start lifting is the day you become forever small. And so what they mean by that is that, you know, the day that you start lifting weights to try and be bigger, you're never big enough. It's not that they start with this preoccupation with and this constant dissatisfaction that is a characteristic of muscle dysmorphia. That comes from the practice.
The path out of the fog will be a long one, Dr. Underwood says, as we don't have enough research about it. And until we reduce the crippling stigma around body image issues in men, we cannot move forward.
Well, I'd like to see us understand the pathways in and out of muscle dysmorphia. So if it does come from bodybuilding practice, are there people that successfully practice bodybuilding with their mental health intact, you know, or talk to former bodybuilders who have gone through the bodybuilding journey and have come out the other side and are not obsessed with their muscularity anymore? How did they learn to become small again? And, you know, what can we learn about how this can be done in a mentally healthy way? What does it require? Because there's certain things about bodybuilding that make it really risky. Like, you know, it's done in front of the mirror. And body dysmorphia, one of the symptoms is obsessive mirror checking. You know, and if you're training for an hour or more in front of a mirror every day, and you're looking at yourself, you know, part of that is looking at your form, making sure you're doing the lift right, but part of it is admiring yourself. And the thing about bodybuilding is that when you lift, all the blood rushes to that muscle group that you're working, and it becomes temporarily sort of engorged with muscle. It becomes bigger. It's called the pump. So when you're looking in the mirror and you're seeing this muscle bigger than it is usually because it's full of blood, and you look and you go, oh, I look great, and then you walk away from the gym and it deflates and you go, oh, I don't look as good as I used to. So there's this constant seeing yourself what you could be, and you're never going to be as big as your pump, because as you get bigger, your pump gets bigger. So you're always chasing this thing that you can never have. There's all of these little elements. I mean, the bodybuilding community is online. Some of them are sort of like a pro-anorexia community. It's just about encouraging unhealthy obsessions. Put bodybuilding above all your social relationships. Be obsessive about it, because that's the only way you're going to get results. It's sort of, one of the guys I quoted in my paper said, it's like living in a bar and trying not to be an alcoholic. It can be done, but it's difficult.
You're listening to Fair Shake on The Source. One of the most frustrating impacts of social media is the distortion that is perpetuated through these communities. Accredited practicing dietitian and owner of Anthea's Nutrition, Anthea Taliopoulos, says misinformation has been rife in recent years.
I think there are some aspects which can be helpful, like in recommending like different food options or giving people some food inspiration, that sort of a thing. But I think more so now when we're seeing more of those like what we eat in a day videos, they can be a bit unhelpful just because people all have different requirements and they might start comparing their food intake to someone else's and become a bit overly obsessive about it. So I think it's just also important to check in terms of who's posting it, what their background is, you know, what their qualifications are and if they're actually the most suitable person to be presenting that information. So I guess looking at things with a critical eye, but still, you know, keeping an open mind in terms of some food ideas rather than actual like calorie tracking and specific macro tracking with those options.
At this point, we are all familiar with the classic gym-goer meal of chicken, rice and broccoli. But with many disordered eating behaviours, restricting your food intake can be triggering. Ms. Taliopoulos says she doesn't believe in calorie tracking, and it's imperative that your diet be well-rounded.
Like a pretty commonly promoted meal that I'm sure we've all heard of. There's nothing wrong with like having, you know, chicken, rice and broccoli. But I think if we're looking at having that every single day at our main meals, like we're not going to be getting enough diversity in there. So sure, we'll be getting some kind of protein, you know, a form of carb and some sort of veg. But really what we want to be looking at is, you know, is that something that we can stick to doing long term as well? And also just considering if we're only having green vegetables, we're actually going to be cutting out more of those antioxidants or anti-inflammatory foods as well. We're going to be giving out that constant same meal when actually if we broadened it a little bit further, focused on adding in that different veg or mixing up our proteins, like say having like some oily fish like a salmon or something like that sometimes, that can also be anti-inflammatory and, you know, be a great source of protein, that would still be fine. Or even rather than just having rice, you could mix it up and say, you know, go for like a pasta or, you know, having brown rice as well or like a quinoa, trying to get those whole grains in. So, yeah, just really looking at getting as much diversity in as we can. So definitely not like having the chicken, rice and broccoli, you know, all the time where we'll be missing out on actually getting some other valuable nutrients in.
So what about protein? Earlier last year, a TikTok challenge suggested dry scooping. This meant that rather than diluting protein powder, people were consuming it raw to give them a boost to their workout. This resulted in growing health concerns on the effects of over-consuming protein products and the long-term effects on the body.
Yeah, so with the proteins, I do find people tend to feel more comfortable even having higher proteins in their diet compared to, say, higher fat or higher carb, really. So it's almost like the proteins have no effect on us, and it's almost like people would feel like they get rid of what they don't need. But that's actually not right. So as with anything, if we have too much, we convert it into our like body fat stores, and that's just pretty much how it goes. So our bodies are pretty good at absorbing protein, and pretty much whatever we have, we're pretty much going to really absorb in our stomach and our intestines as well, and then, you know, really be converting that into fat stores too. But in terms of the effect as well on our kidneys, there is some research around if we have super high protein intake consistently, that's like way beyond our own requirements, that it can sometimes increase our risk of like kidney stones and that sort of a thing. But I think that's much less likely to happen if we're getting that protein in more from food sources.
Human and Supplement Testing Australia, also known as HASTA, test products for substances that have been internationally banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency, including narcotics. Ms. Taliopoulos warns that not all protein products are created equal, and to ensure that your products have been HASTA approved.
actually just making sure that they've been like third party tested as well. So actually checking that they've been quality checked to be approved as sports nutrition products. That can be a main thing, especially if someone's performing at a higher level as well. You definitely want to be checking all of those supplements just to make sure that they're not contaminated at all, because they still can be contaminated these days with their huge range of products out there. So they're not actually all quality checked.
If a product has been HASTA approved, look out for the blue HASTA logo on the front of the container.
You're listening to Fair Shake on The Source.
The societal pressures put on men for muscular bodies doesn't just affect their mental health, but also their physical health. Researchers have found misinformation to be one of the primary reasons for sports-related injuries, which can cause long-term effects on the body. User JJ234 on the Australian Bodybuilding Forum documented his journey working to overcome injury and find a healthy way to maintain lifting weights, which reads as follows.
Hi guys, this is a bit of an introduction and a bit about my journey. I like to lift heavy. It's something I've always done and always will. So when did it all start? I've been lifting since I was a pup. No matter where you are, there's always a gym. So it has always been my go-to and my zen place. Like many, it starts with a few bros, and you just want to get fit and strong. After a while, you just want to get bigger, fitter, stronger, until you've exhausted all your knowledge, so you go seeking more. These days, there are plenty of information on the internet. But back in my day, it was magazines with all pages full of pro bodybuilders and supplements to get you jacked. Basically, I was programmed from a young age to be jacked and massive, as these were the only things to read and gain knowledge. But when the internet came around, it was Bro Science Central, and a lot of it. Everyone had an opinion due to the free speech of the net. But as the years went on, I knew a few things about my body, so I started documenting what I ate and training lots so I could make changes to just be better. To this day, I've written literally hundreds of training programs and many more diets. I've tried bulking, dieting, high reps, low reps, HIIT, sweating. Basically, I've starved myself, almost ate myself to death, and trained my ass off over many, many years. And the key thing is, even after all these years, I never stopped learning. My latest learning curve was a couple years back now, and is what got me into powerlifting. I've always lifted heavy, never competed, but just like to lift heavy. But after many years of poor form, it all caught up with me around 2.5 years ago. I ended up with a 6mm tear in my supraspinatus. In a simple term, a torn, almost semi-detached tendon in my shoulder. At the time, I was doing a mix of high and low reps, a huge volume of training, 6 days a week with little rest. This put me completely out of action, but it gave me time to think while healing. I wasn't exactly sure what I did, but I knew it had to be from the lack of rest with higher reps and multiple sets I was doing. After doing a lot of rehab, speaking to my physio, it was obvious. I had some lacking stabilizer muscles which needed to be strengthened to assist in the rehab. Yes, I did say rehab and physio. The specialist surgeon and two GPs told me the only way to fix this was to put me under the knife to stitch it back on, and they all agreed I would never lift again after it. This got me thinking. I need to do things smarter. I didn't want this to happen again, and I didn't want the other one to happen. So, many banded exercises to help the smaller muscles build up and support the shoulder. But I knew I would be back lifting again in the months to come, and didn't want to be in the same place. So, how do I lift heavy now and do it smarter? Get a personal trainer that trains powerlifters. Approximately 12 months post-injury, I was back lifting in the early 600s. But what an experience learning from someone who actually knows how to lift and to lift heavy consistently.
You're listening to Fair Shake on The Source.
Action regarding body dissatisfaction cannot stop with our episode today. In researching this topic, I found it to be incredibly secretive. I found no one wanted to discuss the topic because of the taboo, and both researchers had to heavily integrate themselves into these communities to gain enough trust to explore solutions. Underreporting in the medical field is a huge issue for men's mental health, which is a leading contributor to the higher risk of suicide in men. In fact, twice as many men die of suicide than on the roads in Australia. Dr. Seekers leaves us with some advice on how to approach a loved one if you suspect they are suffering with significant body image issues.
It's really tricky. It's really tricky because you have to consider all of the whole context, how they began, when did you start seeing it, how often are they doing it. So if it's something that is really regular and it's starting to actually interfere with their daily life, and you can see that they're struggling to balance other things in their life, so this might become the focal point, then I think one of the best things you can do is just sit them down, and rather than focus on what you think might be the problem, because we all want to go in and fix, but often that's not the answer. So it's really just perhaps sitting someone down and asking, you know, just how they're doing on a daily basis. Are you able to get all the things that you want to get done? You know, what are your aims? Those sorts of things. So we move more away from what we think is the issue to, well, how are you fitting everything in? And then often they come to their own conclusion that this is probably something I'm doing too much of. And if they do, then they might admit themselves that maybe there is an issue. And if the issue, and we have to just always remember that this needs to impact their own personal life, not how we see it. So a person viewing someone else, you know, it's very easy for us to critique and say, oh my God, you're doing this way too much. But it really needs to impact that person's life. And so if you're a parent or a loved one, the best thing to do would be to just sit down and ask them how their life is going and just their daily routine. And hopefully they will be able to start to see things themselves rather than be told that, you know, look, what you're doing is not helpful.
Thank you for joining us this week. If you were affected by anything that was said on today's program, please do not hesitate to contact Men's Line on 1300 789978 or Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Produced by Griffith University Communication for Social and Environmental Change Project students. Fair Shake is produced on the unceded lands of the Yagara and Turrbal people in Meanjin and also on Combermary and Yugambeh lands. We pay our respect to elders past, present and future and recognise that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. See you next time on Fair Shake.